welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, we jumped right in there, didn't we? We did. I'm going to have to...
We did. I told you, I had no theme song available, so I warned you.
It's true. And for all... Sorry to all those who were looking for an episode last week. My internet... I don't know. I'm just enjoying my holiday. This is actually just regular eggnog. I'm just really excited to be back. There's nothing in there that would inebriate anything, except maybe people who don't like eggs, I guess. I don't know. I just want to say this is a gaming podcast, but I do want to jump on this weird bandwagon that I've seen on Twitter of people hating eggnog. Like, we talked a bit about it on Twitter, like, not too long ago. What's going on with eggnog?
I don't know. I don't know why people don't like eggnog. I love eggnog. Eggnog pancakes, eggnog coffee, eggnog just with brandy in it late at night. Oh, so good. I don't know why. It's the best December/Christmassy drink. It's so good. It's so bad for you. It's like full of sugar and fat and badness, but.
You don't have to tell me that.
It's so good.
I mean, I think it's just a solid, like, you know, I usually pour like half a glass. Maybe that's too much. I don't know how people drink their eggnog, but I usually do like half a glass just to sip on it. And it's fine and it's great and I don't need any. I've tried it in coffee. It makes coffee taste a little funky, I find.
Really? Oh, I love it in coffee.
I'm still not there.
I love it in general.
Yeah. No, that's totally fine. We are not... This is an eggnog-safe podcast.
Yes. Yeah. All lovers of eggnog, welcome. speaking of, but this has nothing to do with eggnog, but
sure
I did want to remind you, at this festive time, if you are looking for a wonderful charity to support, you can support our Extra Life campaign right up until December 31st. We did our stream just before BlizzCon. It was Halloween weekend when we did our 24-hour stream. We had a lot of fun. We played a lot of games. You can check out the archives at twitch.tv/JossPlays. And if you would like to donate to our Extra Life campaign, we are very, very close to our $3,000 goal. We had a really successful year this year and just wanted to let everyone know. Again, the donations are open until December 21st. So you can go to bit.ly/TGI2016, TGI in capitals. Make sure you select a team member and then you can donate to our campaign. So thank you everyone who has supported us so far. And thank you everyone who is going to support us between now and December 31st. This week, what we're going to talk about is what we're playing. Then we're going to get into some of the Game Awards stuff that happened a couple of weeks ago. Some of the new things that we saw there, I think, was probably most exciting. Ryan, do you want to talk a little bit about what you played this week? Because I know yours was actually directly inspired by the Game Awards.
Yeah, so there's this game called That Dragon, Cancer. I guess there's a pause there. I had heard about this game a lot, and I'm one of those, if you've been listening to the show, we've been doing this a long time, you're probably aware that I like to sort of drift off the path and try some of the experimental games. Mm-hmm. That Dragon Cancer is one of those. It's a title that actually won Games on Impact, so an award, and the guy gave a speech. I can't remember his name, but it was a wonderful speech. He basically thanked all the people who played the game, all the people who supported him. It was an Indiegogo and I believe an Ouya funded game. Mm-hmm. So it's had a rough go, but the game is about his family. It's about his life.
I was going to say, and this is kind of what struck me the most, because I literally skipped like every acceptance speech. But I hadn't heard much about, like, I'd heard about the campaign for That Dragon Cancer, but then I hadn't actually heard that it had, you know, come out. Like, it just kind of totally fell off the radar after the Kickstarter campaign. So when it won the award, I was kind of like, oh, I didn't even realize that was out yet. Like, when did that happen? What's going on with this game? And I saw like the little bits of gameplay that they showed when they were, you know, talking about who was going to get the gaming for Impact or the Impact Gaming or whatever it was.
Weirdly titled. Award.
It's a very odd title, but basically they're like socially impactful video games. It's like games with a message and a purpose that is applicable more to real life. When this category was announced and then the winner was announced, I'm like, oh, I'm actually going to watch this because like I haven't, you know. Realize, like, I don't know what's going on with this game. Mm-hmm. I swear to God, Ryan, in the first like probably 20 seconds of his acceptance speech, I was crying. I had like big tears falling down my face, and I was just like, oh my God, because it's a story about his family and his son and his eventual death to cancer, which is like, I don't even know how you play. I listened to the acceptance speech and I'm like, I can never, ever, ever play this game. I don't know how you actually sat down and played this game, especially after seeing the Game Awards and that acceptance speech. I don't know how you sat down and went, okay, this is one I'm going to check out.
It's interesting. I'll say this, like, I can't recommend this game. You kind of have to hear what I'm saying, hear what the creator was saying, watch a trailer and make that decision for yourself. I'm not saying I can't recommend it because it's a bad game, because it's not a bad game. It does what it set out to do, in which was a chronicling of the 4-year journey of Joel, who was diagnosed with cancer at year one. And, it's not a spoiler. It's just what happens. And he passes away. And it's the journey of that family's, acceptance, denial, like all the steps. And then it's a snapshot of their experience. So you might think like, oh, is this trying to be the how to deal with cancer book? No, not at all. It is a story, a retelling of their experience. And it involves things that actually might not have come up in your life or would never come up in your life. Like there's a lot of religion. They're a very religious family. And they explore that in a way that is very interesting. I'm not a religious person, but I respect people who are. And this game does a really good job of showing what that family went through as a religious family dealing with this tragedy that is happening and unfolding. And man, it's a sad game. So freaking sad. I cried a couple times. Like and Caden is the age at which Joel was diagnosed. So I'm like playing this game, and I know deep down that he got the recordings from probably his other kids by asking them to act a specific way. Like I doubt he recorded some of the more harrowing scenes. Like there's the one scene that really got me was he's in the hospital and his son won't stop crying and he's trying to comfort Joel, and it's just, he's having no luck, and it explores like what's happening in front of him, what's happening inside his head, what's happening to his family, and just the interactions between him and his wife. It's actually just a great example of what people can do with the medium that is video games that isn't chainsawing people in half or climbing mountains or, saving the princess. Like, this is a story of a real life boy who suffered from and passed away from cancer. And they deal with every stage of it, from diagnosing to chemo to the terminal aspect of it. Like, man, just, it's a heavy game. And again, cannot recommend it. But
I even just sitting here listening to you, I'm like, nope, 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 nope. And I don't even have a 1-year-old son, so I don't know how you actually played all the way through this game.
I was just,
I feel like if it was me, I would, and I'm sure it was very, like, I'm sure it was interesting, but I can't imagine that if it was something that was actually really applicable to my life, if I could then go and watch it, like, play out. I feel like it would make me a hypochondriac. Like, every time my kid would, like, cough, I'd be like, oh my God, hospital, he has cancer, get in the van.
Well, I mean, like, I want to be honest here. Like, after I had played, it had affected my mood and, and affected the way I was around Caden. And, like, oh my gosh, dude, like, you're such a cute little ball of fun, and I never want you to change or get sick or anything. And it's just, you kind of have to play it from the perspective that this is their story. This, you shouldn't allow it to change the way you act around your friends, but also it should allow you to, I don't know, just experience this person's slice of life, even if it is like a really shitty one. I don't know. Maybe down the road it'll help me in some way or won't, because there's other things there. There's good messages on just being a good dad, a good mom, a good family unit. Because it's not just about the character, the child, Joel. It's also just about, how these families interact with each other, because it's not just about the cancer, it's also about living life outside of that, you know, because when you get cancer, that's not the end, that's the beginning of a road to recovery, but there are like stages in between where you're in remission, or you know, you've just come out of chemo and you're like, yeah. And I guess maybe I'm a little less susceptible to wanting to play this because I haven't had anyone very close to me suffer deeply from cancer. Like I know folks who have had cancer and have passed away from cancer, but no one as close as like a close
immediate
relative.
Family member.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it because it is a super depressing game, but I did want to touch on the fact that when this guy won Impact or Games on Impact or whatever they're called, and his speech was probably the best thing about the Game Awards, but then right after, a giant freaking razor walks out and then they play fake Mortal Kombat.
That was so cringeworthy.
I know.
I was just like, because they said something about like, oh, these people in the front row were saved by, and literally guys, like I can't remember the exact name, but it was the equivalent of like Razor Man.
Yeah, yeah.
it was like...
Shick guy. It was the moment of product placement that stood out. Like, maybe, I guess, they're not getting enough money. Like, I understand they got to make money. They got to pay for this. But maybe they just weren't getting enough money by running, like, the Hearthstone commercial every 30 minutes, which I'm totally fine with. As a video game awards ceremony, yeah, let's show some trailers. Let's get some buzz going.
Video game trailers? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the Schick Razor Man with, you know, it was just, I could, you know what? I was even fine with the Assassin's Creed VR bit where they were talking to people. Totally cool with that. It fits within that like red carpet-esque portion of award shows. But the giant razor just, he would always come out after the biggest moments too. Like, this guy's talking about his kid dying from cancer, and then the giant razor sponsor dude. Yeah. Hey guys. It's like,
that was probably, you're right. The worst moment, the worst timing. It's like this big emotional acceptance speech. And then, razor dude with karate chop
action
motions. Like, yeah, just bad.
They must have known that award was going to be given. Move the stupid ad, just make it after the game that won best action or something, and then it's not as bad. It's still bad, but anyways,
bad reading of an emotionally charged moment, that's for sure. Speaking of emotionally charged moments, I was kind of playing Final Fantasy 15. So basically, Matt is a huge Final Fantasy fan, so I didn't actually play the game because
couldn't get near
the TV for like a week.
Nice. So, I was gonna ask if you actually played it or if Kearney just like would nip at your fingers when you got too close.
It was really funny, actually, because for the first few times that I actually went over to watch him play, because I was interested in the game, I played the demo and really liked it, and I like the idea of really anything that brings that kind of not even necessarily steampunk, but like the techie stuff mixed with magic stuff, which is what this Final Fantasy does. There's literally like a kingdom of magic wielders and a kingdom of technology wielders, and they're clashing. So, you know, I find that really, really interesting. And so anytime it's the same as like Bioshock or Dishonored, when there's kind of that like tech side and but also a magic side, I find that really cool. So I was looking forward to Final Fantasy. And the first few times that I kept walking over, it was either like super bromance cutscene or like they're talking to this barely wearing any clothing, big boobs chick who is like probably the only one in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I really feel like they put one in the game just so they could like have shots and be like, no, guys, totally not gay. There's a chick with big boobs.
So, okay.
Like, it was just really, really weird. It's like every time I would come over, because she was a quest giver. She was very central to the story. You had to keep going back to her and getting all these quests. And so you just, every time I came over, I'd be like, so what are you up to? He's like, talking to, I can't even remember her name. I think it's like Cindy. Oh, it's Cindy, because I kept making the joke that she probably puts a little heart on the I at the end of her name. So her name is Cindy.
No. So, okay. This game's super Japanese, isn't it?
Yes, it is super Japanese.
Super Japanese. Okay, I just want to get in front of that. So the interesting thing about Final Fantasy is that there's always a character named Cid. And when they announced that Cid was going to be a female for the first time in the franchise's history, people were really excited. And then when they unveiled this character, all you would have to do is give her like a nice, like a shirt, and then it wouldn't be...
Well,
like, is it
Cid
bad?
Cid was in the game.
Oh, so there is another...
She's like, yeah, she's like his, like, nephew, niece, or something like that.
So there's two... Okay, never mind, then I'm mistaken. So this is just a random boob lady.
Yes.
So as a guy, I have to, like, we have to have this conversation.
But
she's like
the only... random, but like I called her Tits McGee, and she wasn't Tits McGee one, she was Tits McGee the only one. So
wait.
I was like, everyone else in the game was like super fully clad and everything, and you know, you spent most of the time with the main four dude bro characters and monsters. Like, there wasn't a whole lot. Everyone else was totally normal. And then there was just this one chick who was, like, not wearing any clothes and had gigantic boobs and a tiny waist. And I was like, could you get any more token?
Yeah, so this is the thing I don't understand. Like, nowadays, when it comes to mediums in general, like, people are pretty good at pointing, that's bullshit right there. That right there is bullshit, and... or like, there are women out there that dress like that, right? And that it would be bad to say you can't dress like that, right? So should we say Square Enix, that's bad to portray a female character like that? Or do we say that's just part of her character? She likes a good, I don't know, she doesn't like boob sweat. She likes a good draft going on, I guess. I don't know.
No, I'm not, like, and I we've talked about this to death on the show before.
Boobs are good. Boobs are great.
Boobs are good. Women are hot. I love it. It's good. Yay.
Yeah.
But like, it was just so funny that every single time, because she's the first main quest hub, every time I came over to be like, I'm gonna watch you play. He's like, what are you doing? I'm talking to Cindy.
All right, I'll come back. I'll leave you two alone. I'll just, you know, I'll go upstairs, say hi to Liam, and come right back down. How's that sound?
Exactly.
Oh, poor Matt. But, no, I feel for him.
Outside of that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually because I saw Matt play all the way start to finish, and the story was fantastic. Like, I really wanted to know what was going to happen in the story, and the one thing that I have now realized about Final Fantasy is it really doesn't pull any punches. We watched the... we watched the movie that came out that kind of happens slightly before the video game starts and has a little bit of overlap with the first few scenes in the video game. Mm-hmm. So basically, in the video game, you are the prince and you're talking to your dad and you're leaving the city to go on your adventures with your guys. And in the movie, it's about the dad and it's about like the invasion that happens, and then... this might be a spoiler, but it's like before the start of the game, so mm-hmm. I guess it's a movie spoiler more than anything else. Anyways, it happens right at the start of the game, so we're just gonna talk about it anyways. Sure. But the dad is murdered, and that's the start of the war because the dad is the king. So it's like the movie is that story of like the dad up to, you know, the kind of declaration of war and everything else. And then so the video game starts, and you kind of, while you're on the road, get the news of your father being murdered and everything that's going on. And just the story itself is really, really interesting, because in the movie, there was a character, they're basically the main character of the movie, that I really, really liked. And then he died. And then like, you play all the way through Final Fantasy, and I'm not going to give away too much, but the things that happen are like I said, they don't pull any punches. Like, bad things happen. Bad things happen to your friends and characters that you like. And it was really interesting because of that, because you were going through the whole thing. And I mean, I joke about it being this big, like, dude, bro, like, semi, like, homoerotic car trip thing, because they're all very effeminate characters, except for probably, I think his name is Gladius. He's like the super big buff dude, bro.
Hey, man, duff dude bros, they can be super touchy feely too. You do not put that on Gladius.
They had some touchy feely moments and conversations and stuff, and
as you do, you know, on like, road trips, man, you bro out. You just bro out so hard that it's like.
Yeah, it was a total bromance. But so like I'm joking about that because that's very much how it starts. But it gets pretty serious and pretty dark pretty quickly. And I found the story really compelling, and the combat was really cool too. So it was basically like kind of. Mass Effect-y kind of, in that like you're in a battle with your squad because all of your friends fight with you, except for one of the friends, his special ability is taking pictures. So he basically like takes screenshots during the fights, except for while he's taking screenshots, they're not necessarily like good. Even when you max out his photo skills, sometimes it's like he dropped the camera on the ground or something, or like he was dead and still snapped a shot. Like some of them are really bad, but there is a lot of like really interesting ways that they incorporate his photos and his like documentation into the game and into the storyline. So they do use it in kind of cool ways, but when you've got like dude that throws fireballs and then dude that takes pictures, you're kind of like
sounds like Mass Effect, honestly. How's his Instagram feed though? Has he got a lot of like likes and followers and stuff?
Overall I think that it was a really great game, a fun experience to watch. I am looking forward to, now that he seems to be done with it, at least for the time being, I'm looking forward to giving it a shot myself.
Cool.
Even though I know the story and everything, how it goes, I'm interested to get my hands on the controls and see how it is. But it's very, very, very min-maxy. Like the crafting system, even watching him like going through the crafting system and stuff, it was very much like you have to make all your spells and things, and I was kind of like, oh, that's a little bit more in depth than I tend to like my stuff. I usually tend to prefer less crafting, more discovery. Yeah. So you know, like I would rather have to dungeon crawl to find a rare spell, and then once I learn the spell, then I just have access to it, as opposed to having to dungeon crawl for mats to make a rare spell. So that's kind of the distinction there, at least from what I could tell. But it looked really cool. The graphics were awesome. Overall, I'm excited to try it, and Matt seemed to love it. It took about, cool. I think it took Matt about 50 hours to finish it, start to finish, but he did a lot of side quests, like every possible side quest you could do out of the first quest hub. Can't imagine why he wanted to stay there so long, but
he's never gonna live it down.
No, never. But I think you could probably do it, and Matt's saying in the chat room that you could probably do it in 30 to 35 hours, but it took him about 50. So, it's a solid, solid game. Cool. I know a lot of people tend to complain about just generally the amount of time it takes to complete a game and saying, like, you're charging me $60 to $80 depending on what country you live in, and you're only giving me 10 hours of gameplay. This is, you know, a $60 to $80 game, and it's got 50 hours of gameplay, and that's just the main story. There's tons and tons and tons of side content to do as well. You could, it's very, very Skyrim like actually. Like, you could probably sink a good 150 hours into this game easy. Okay. So,
well, I'm interested because I'm kind of been eyeing it as my like post-holiday pickup kind of thing, because I haven't really picked up a lot of new games lately, and I know there's been a lot of options building up, what with, you know, Dishonored and Dead Rising and now Final Fantasy and stuff. So I mean, I'm always down for a good RPG, and you know, Super Japanese is fine, that's great, I want to try it. Like, I just know I'm gonna run into the same issue where like the one time I'm talking to Cindy is the one time Ashley walks by, and she'll say I've kind of rubbed off on her, where she's like, man, this is a Japanese game, isn't it? It's like, yeah, it is. It is. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, because it's true. It is a Japanese game, and I don't know if you saw, there was a VR trailer for this game, and it started with one of the characters wearing the headset and staring at Cindy's chest. And that was the start of the VR trailer, which the VR allows you to step into the eyes of one of the characters and control where you look. So yeah. It's kind of a cool tongue-in-cheek, haha, we know you're going to do this, so we're just going to show you. But seriously, be better people. So
that's funny. Matt is also saying in the chat room right now that they are adding more story content for free. So yeah, free content is always good. But you did play some DLC this week, right?
I did. I don't know about you, but some people are big fans of Star Wars. I am. I kind of like Star Wars.
I'm a half decent fan of Star Wars. I think it's pretty okay.
We can at least agree, and we've gotten heat on this show before when they started like doing marketing for Episode 7. We were kind of like, that looks cool, but not the Second Coming, I guess. But I guess it actually was the Second Coming when you think about it. But Rogue One getting some great reviews. And Rogue One is getting some DLC, or has DLC, on Battlefront. So if you happen to drop $150 into Star Wars Battlefront, you too can play Rogue One DLC, which launched early through the season pass. And I gotta say, I've been playing a lot of Star Wars Battlefront, and it feels finally like a complete package. Like, I know there's more there than what would initially come these days in the base offering of a game, but... yeah, I don't know. Like, the Rogue One DLC puts you on the tropical planet. Have you seen any of the trailers for Rogue One at all? I'm sure you've seen something.
I saw one trailer for it, I think. Yeah, but I don't watch a lot of TV, right? So
that's
unless
true,
it happens, like, at the start of a Twitch video, like, unless it's a commercial on a Twitch channel, I probably won't see it. Well, I don't see trailers otherwise.
Yeah, you'll probably be seeing a lot of them. I remember when I started watching Twitch over the holidays last year, you'd see a lot of the Star Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, there's this tropical planet that they haven't really explored something like that in the movies before, so that's going to be in Rogue One. And Rogue One, it's actually called Rogue One Scarif, and that's the expansion. It takes place on this island, this tropical island, and it feels really weird running around as stormtroopers and rebels on a tropical planet. Really cool, a lot of fun. It's more Star Wars. My favorite thing is they've added, and they probably added it in the expansion prior to this, but they've added what is similar to operations in Battlefield 1, where you start, it's like a tiered victory term. So basically on defense, you have three times to stop the opposition, and as the opposition you have three things you have to complete before you win the game. So in Scarif, it's called infiltration, and it's literally you stealing the Death Star plans as you would in the movie. And it starts out in space as you're trying to sneak past the blockade and onto the planet where the plans are. Just like in the trailer, you see the shield sort of like go down as a couple ships go through. You actually start the infiltration by distracting the Star Destroyers, and then if you finish that, you go onto the planet, and on the planet you try to do another distraction where you're trying to blow up these like giant foldy ships where they're, I don't know. Again, not a huge fan that I know what the foldy ships are called. I'm sure like Nigel's listening or is being warned that we're talking about Star Wars. I was trying to remember his screen name. I can remember his real name.
Boba
I
know, Fetish.
Yes, thank you. I think he was the one that gave a shit about Star Wars 7 or whatever, but Star Wars 7. Anyways, and then it ends with you collecting the plans and bringing them back to your ship to escape. And it was a really cool, like, sort of tiered path, but I haven't played a lot of Battlefront, so I guess they had added this in the previous expansion. So it was nice to see them add more than just, hey, another variation on Capture the Flag. So it's cool to see them sort of building story into the multiplayer without actually having to build a campaign. And I kind of appreciate the tiered version of things. Similar to how Overwatch does the, you know, capture the payload, then deliver the payload, you know? I like that that split up of the match.
Like different steps of things.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of helps, you know, keep the defense different than just standing in one spot. You're kind of doing different things. So in the case of Rogue One and infiltration, you're in a ship and then you're on the ground trying to defend 2 points, and then you're on the ground again but trying to keep the enemy from delivering a package, so basically capture the flag. But it's a lot of fun. And again, like, if you have Battlefront, you have the season pass, and you're a fan of Rogue One, they definitely delivered on here's your game tie-in. It will be interesting to see what they do with Battlefront going forward, because there's actually a second one coming out next fall that's supposed to be about the new movies. So like, I don't know how they do that, whether it's just based on 7 and 8 and comes out around 8. I don't know. But
so is it going to be a DLC for this one, or is it like Battlefront 2?
Battlefront 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that they were actually coming out with a whole other game. I thought it was all just built in the same game, universe, platform, everything. Like, I thought it was like expansions.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Of course not. Of course, no. It's another big, huge base game purchase. Of course.
I mean, I would.
Why not?
I would love for it to be DLC because the aspect of buying another version of Battlefront after investing originally in Battlefront, like I didn't pick this up on sale, so right now you can get Battlefront base game for free as part of EA Access, or pay $20 for it, or $40 for both the base and the season pass. I think the season pass might be a little bit more expensive.
Well, yeah, because it's been out for over a year now, right?
Yeah, it's been out for over a year, and the season pass just concluded, so you have all that content delivered now, and you can probably pick up the whole package for, like, I'd say $60 on sale. Like, through the holiday sale, you'll be able to get it way less, and I actually bought both when they were on sale, but both were $50 when I bought them, so it was still $100 to buy the whole package. And again, I'm enjoying myself. I love the content. It's the best Star Wars video game out there. There's not a lot of them, but it's the best.
That is what I've heard, that it is. It's a lot of fun, and it's a really good adaptation. Mm-hmm. I know my roommate Adam had a really good time with it when it first came out. Yeah. But just a reminder before we get into our topic of the week this week, which is the Game Awards, I just wanted to remind everybody that if you are a fan of Blizzard games, all of their games right now are currently in Wintervale, which is the celebration of essentially Christmas in their Blizzard game universe, which includes really cool skins if you're in Heroes or Overwatch. Overwatch is doing the same thing that they normally do, in that you get loot boxes that are themed for the holiday. There's also brawls that are themed in, I believe, Overwatch for sure. I think there's a special holiday brawl in Heroes as well. Warcraft is doing Wintervale as well. Oh, sorry, it's coming in Heroes still, but I know all the skins at least are in Heroes right now. If you guys are interested in Wintervale holiday things and skins and stuff, make sure you go and check out your favorite Blizzard game. I know I'm excited about some of the stuff I've seen for Overwatch skins, which is crazy because they pull me in like every freaking holiday and that's it. And then I'm just like, oh man.
You can
I play so much and then I always end up spending a little bit of money too on some boxes, and then I'm just like, oh, I hate myself afterwards because then there's this lull of months between like when I play.
Well, they've made it so you can get, I actually experienced this last night, where you can get more loot boxes without paying money through the arcade. You can probably get 4 pretty quickly just by doing the different matches and winning, unfortunately. Oh. But that's my problem, is I often have to play once or twice or 3 times before, especially the 1v1 mystery. So frustrating. I'm glad I finished that. But yeah, I'm not buying loot boxes. I'm going to earn them, and I'm going to enjoy myself as I earn them. But I will be pretty bummed if I don't get the Tracer Elf skin. She looks pretty awesome.
I feel like there's always one where you're just like, oh man, I really, like for me, it was the Witch Mercy at Halloween, which I never did get.
Oh,
like,
I didn't either. I remained strong. Thing.
Yeah, no. I got the spray, the Mercy Witch spray, the Mercy Witch like little avatar thing. I got everything except the actual skin, but. Yeah. We also wanted to remind you guys that we do have glassware and t-shirts. If you guys are interested in showing off your TGI pride, you can go to etch.emove.tv to pick up any of our glasses. We have pint glasses, wine glasses, we have coffee mugs, all kinds of stuff over there. Or you can go to shirts.emove.tv to get your hands on t-shirts from things like Gamers In, obviously, as well as ITN and The Angry Chicken. I think that's it right now, but I think there are plans for more shirts to go up soon. So please go and check out our 2 merch sites. Cool. Our topic of the week this week, as I mentioned, was the Game Awards from a couple of weeks ago. We were planning on covering them last week, but with Ryan's internet issues, we weren't able to record last week and weren't able to talk about the Game Awards until tonight. So the big winner at the Game Awards this year was actually Overwatch. They ended up taking away the Game of the Year title this year. which I thought was really interesting. It was up against some really tough competition, actually, and I was kind of surprised that Uncharted 4 didn't get the Game of the Year, but they've won Game of the Year in the past, so I wonder if it was more along the lines of, you know, Overwatch is new, so, you know, Uncharted 4 is the fourth in a franchise, although the last Nathan Drake story, so... but yeah, I was a little bit surprised that Overwatch won over Uncharted 4.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly played both. I enjoyed the complete package of Uncharted 4 more than I have Overwatch. But I feel like Overwatch is such a triumph of that studio. And again, like, we give a lot of credit to Blizzard here on the show, so this is going to sound like more of that. So it shouldn't really come as a surprise. But I think Overwatch is actually, minus some of the business dealing stuff, like, if we remove that from the package, that game is a really good, solid multiplayer shooter with focus on story. Maybe not front and center like we would like, but the attention to detail is there, and that goes a long way with these types of games. And I think when you look at all the other titles there, it was tough to pick, and I think just the journey that Overwatch had to overcome... like, if you had asked me in May, would Overwatch be Game of the Year, I'd probably say, yeah, probably. And, but you asked me now, and I'm kind of like, that loot boxes kind of sours me on it. But, I don't know. From a gameplay perspective, it's really fun and really well balanced.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, I find Overwatch is, it's very fun. I like playing it a lot. I don't play it as much as I play some other Blizzard titles, but that isn't over. It's more that other Blizzard titles are more fun and more compelling. It's not that Overwatch is not compelling or not fun. It's just that there's other offerings that appeal to me more as a gamer. But Overwatch it's great, and I'm wondering if they see it as having a lot of staying power.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it won the award because you can't really win Game of the Year in a year that you didn't release, right? Like, I don't even know what they could possibly do next year to be eligible for Game of the Year. So I feel like, you know, if you're looking at the list, you're like, okay, there could probably be a Doom 2, there could be a Titanfall 3, there could be another Uncharted, even if it's not Nathan Drake, and Uncharted's already won. If you're looking to... kind of recognize Blizzard and recognize the achievements of Overwatch, like, this is the year to do it.
Right.
And because it has so much staying power and there won't be an Overwatch 2 for maybe ever, I think that this was the year to do it if you were ever going to do it. So I think that probably weighed a lot on their decision making. But I think that Uncharted 4 was fantastic, and I think that Witcher 3 not being on the Game of the Year list at all is a bit of a travesty.
Did that not come out last? That came out last year.
The
DLC won the award.
The DLC won the award. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is about Overwatch, I think that's a great point, just in terms of Blizzard being recognized for a game they've made that can compete with a lot of the other bigger AAA games. Like, we love Blizzard here, but let's face it, they don't really make Game of the Year games. When you compare them to all the other products that come out, World of Warcraft. And a World of Warcraft expansion, a Hearthstone expansion, a Heroes of the Storm patch update, Diablo 4, I guess maybe, well, anyways, I just don't think they make Game of the Year games, you know? They make games for the people who love them, and a lot of people love them, but they don't really compare well in an awards aspect, and all this stuff we should mention. Having said, our awards show is going to come up in a couple episodes, but awards shows are dumb. You know, like, it's so hard to cap someone the best game of the year. But I think this year, when you look at all the games that came out, it was a great year. And Overwatch getting that award is kind of like a good timing, especially for Blizzard, because I think that this game specifically deserves it. And I mean, there's some stuff coming out about Doom, about how that game was made, and I really love that game. I still don't think that one's Game of the Year. Action game? Yes, by all means. Best action game.
It's so funny because even when they were showing the, like, scenes and trailers and trying to hype the game, anytime it was actually nominated for an award, I had the exact same reaction anytime I would go over and watch Matt play. I literally was watching it and I was like, ew, ew, ew.
Oh man, but it's so like, good.
This is not for me.
The live Doom soundtrack that they played. I found out the Doom soundtrack's on Spotify. That game, I mean, as an action movie, and there's a great documentary out there put out that's just been put out by NoClip on YouTube that you can watch for free. That's probably going to be an hour in total length once it's done. Great look at the way that game was made and the attention to detail. Like, I love the nitty-gritty behind-the-scenes stuff. And Doom, best action game this year, but definitely not game of the year. But I think Overwatch, yeah, like, really nails it. And I think that company, like Blizzard as a company, knows how to address issues that people have. And they're getting there with the loot boxes. Like, they're adding more ways for you to earn loot boxes for free besides grinding. You can earn, like, when they reset the arcade, you can earn 4 pretty quickly. And then you can earn another 3 every week. So there's a lot of ability there. But you can still go and pay $50 if you really want to. But, like, besides the awards, like, the Zelda trailer, we have to talk about the Zelda trailer. Because, come on, we would be remiss, right? Are you ready for more Zelda? Come on.
See, uh-oh. I'm ready to actually freaking play Zelda.
Oh, right, we've had this conversation. Another
effing trailer, Ryan. I'm so sick of trailers. I want to actually play the game. And they didn't talk about any kind of rumors. They didn't talk about release date. They didn't talk about anything. And I was just like, oh my God.
So I don't want
to... I can't get excited about trailers, Ryan, because I'm so worried about the rumors that it's going to get pushed to holiday 2017 are going to be right and confirmed and everything.
What? No, they're not announced. Those are rumors that are out there that it's 2017 holiday.
Yeah, it's being delayed again.
Oh.
How did you not hear this?
Because I haven't had internet for like a week.
Dude, so, this was like a month and a half ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it came out basically leaked that they were delaying Zelda until holiday 2017. And then Nintendo refused to comment. All you have to say, Nintendo, is no.
but they refused
to say anything, which makes me go, of course they're delaying it again. Of course.
So we talked about this, I think, actually, now that I remember it. It was a while ago, and there was this rumor. And it was pretty... The reasons for the delay made sense in that it's a huge game, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, but, we did talk about it. I'm like, Ryan, what do you
I just, you don't I try to like step you away
it out of your head?
From the Zelda being delayed thing. Here's the thing. Whether it's delayed or not, you're going to get one more trailer, and that's in January when they unveil the Switch lineup. And in January, we'll know when Zelda's coming, a.k.a. 1 or 0, coming at the launch, coming sometime, who cares? Why are you doing this to me, Nintendo? Not now. but in terms of the trailer... I agree with you. I'm starting to come around to you. Like, I'm getting sick of these like trailers that they don't want to show us anything, but they're clearly showing us something. There was some sort of female character displayed in the game. Some people are saying it's two different female characters. Some are saying it's Zelda in different outfits. Some are saying it's a female character you can play as.
I'm at the point now, I don't even care.
I kind of agree.
I just want the game. Like, yeah. I don't, yeah.
Okay,
I
so
play now.
What about Mass Effect? They finally unveil Mass Effect gameplay.
This was so freaking cool.
Okay.
This was exactly what I wanted No Man's Sky to be. Because the premise of Mass Effect is that you are basically exploring the universe looking for a new Earth. So that's kind of what I wanted No Man's Sky to do. Like, that's all the story you need to give me in No Man's Sky is give me a reason for the exploration. And so basically Mass Effect showed us you can go to a whole bunch of different planets. You're going to meet a whole bunch of different races. You've got different races as part of your crew. And we saw, like, races that we know and love, like Krogan.
Yeah, Krogan. Turians.
Yeah, the Turians, like, so much goodness. It's like, it's all the great stuff that you loved from Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, but in a newer, shinier package. And I'm so excited about the new shiny package and the story that's driving it. It's more of an exploration slash expansion for the human race type of a story, as opposed to, oh my God, the universe is ending kind of a story. Now, we don't know why you need to find a new Earth. We don't know any of that kind of stuff. I just found it really interesting that you're not going to be fighting, or at least it doesn't seem like it, but you're not going to be fighting like some big, bad, evil thing like the Reapers.
No.
This is very much an exploration. And, you know, there it seems like there's going to be like lots of like you're going to come across some planets that are like civil war. And like each little planet has its own environment, its own story, and it's unique. Yeah. And that's what I wanted No Man's Sky to be, a universe that I could explore full of unique planets, but with some purpose and some reason and some story. And so Mass Effect is like blowing my mind right now, and it's the way that I like, those are the things that I want added to No Man's Sky to make that actually fun and playable and worth my time.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer shows off a lot of what I wanted to see in a next gen version of a game I enjoyed in the previous generation. I had the same reaction to when we first saw Zelda, when I first played the new Batman game, and Uncharted, and so on and so forth. So when I saw this trailer, I was like, yes, thank you, this looks great. There are some rough edges. A lot of people are pointing out like some of the facial animations look a little wonky, but that's the last thing that they do when they do a pass on the cinematics, is clean up sort of the mocap of the face, because when they capture that stuff, that's the messiest data, because there's a lot of points moving. And that's the story I'm sticking with, because I actually really don't know. I'm just assuming. But I'm excited to play more Mass Effect. And the story, I agree, is kind of like, you know, let's step away from the cataclysmic events that were happening in two, setting up in two and happening in three. There's a timeline on the website for Andromeda Program that actually explains where this takes place. They launch during Mass Effect 2. And it's a private program designed around finding and expanding the home area. So right now we were in the Milky Way galaxy, and that is obviously getting to a point where that galaxy is having some issues. So they set up this Andromeda program to send four ships plus a Nexus, which is basically the Citadel, 600 years away to the Andromeda galaxy. And their mission is to find a new home, as well as setting up some sort of way to travel back to the Mario galaxy. And then I almost said Mexico galaxy. What is wrong with me? To the Mass Effect.
Milky Way,
thank you. Milky Way galaxy. So there's some interesting prospects there where you're 600 years in the future, therefore passing the Reaper invasion, and possibly looking at mid-cycle, if depending on the ending. So they could address the endings to the Mass Effect series in this new Andromeda series by it being 600 years in the future, but having that link that they're going to build. And some are saying that Andromeda 2 could be some sort of joining mission and possibly looking at a canon ending for the Mass Effect series. I don't know, but the prospect of that actually happening is very exciting. And if they don't go down that route, well, that's also exciting.
So wait, okay, so it's 600 years in the future from Mass Effect 2?
Yes.
So they wouldn't have anything to do with the Reaper invasion. It would already be over by the time you're hitting...
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so depending on the ending of the Mass Effect series, I think that one thing is everybody's a cyborg. Two, there's the Destroy, right?
Right.
Everything dies. I'm so hard to remember. I know there's the cybernetic.
There was like a green one, a blue one, and a red one, right?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't help. Like, it feels like we're going talking about
her. There was one that was like the merging of like machine,
which
and
was blue,
organics. Right. Yeah.
And then I think green This
one, yeah.
The green was the steeple. What is it? This one? I don't know. I don't know how to do it. There was a joining one. There was you as Shepard becomes part of the Reapers, I think. And then there was a Destroy where you try to destroy the Reapers. Anyways, besides the point, whatever happened in the main Mass Effect series, those events are concluded and passed far past enough that you could create an ending that works for every single one of those endings. And maybe there's a little flavor text to kind of explain and give it a little flavor based on the actual ending you had. So
okay.
It's again, I'm
so
putting,
basically it's going to confirm the canon of what happened at the end of Mass Effect 3.
Maybe.
Without actually having to have anything to do with that timeline. Okay, that makes more sense, because I was like, I thought it's very specifically was not going to interact with Mass Effect 3 in the story there at all, but I see what you mean. Because it's in the future, we're going to get an ending that's, or we're going to get a confirmed canon for the series, which is cool.
I mean, if the main mission is to build a link between the galaxies, at some point they have to kind of explore the possibility of seeing what happened. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to worry about it for this game, but if the mission really is to build a home that is connected to the previous home, they'll have to address it in some fashion, which is exciting. And if they don't address it, I'm also fine with that. I just want more Mass Effect.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want them to paint themselves into a corner so they didn't have to make more Mass Effect. I'm glad that they went back and shot off of that, like Back to the Future 2. I don't know.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. I think Mass Effect was definitely the highlight for me of the Game Awards. There were some other specific ones I wanted to talk about. Best mm-hmm. Narrative was actually won by Uncharted 4, which I think is very well deserved. I wanted to see them win a major award because mm-hmm. I thought that that was a really, really good game. But it was up against Firewatch, Inside, Mafia 3, and Oxenfree, which I hadn't even heard of Oxenfree, so that was a new one for me.
Hmm.
But, yeah, the other ones, I know this is going to make me sound like a horrible, bitchy person, but I'm really glad Firewatch didn't win. I hated that game, man.
I liked it, but I actually didn't need it to win anything. What was it up against?
So that was, Firewatch was in the best narrative category. It was also in best art direction, and Inside won that one, which, Inside is the one where, I didn't get very far because I thought it wanted me to kill all the chickens, and I didn't want to do that, so...
It did. Well, yeah. Actually, no. I can't remember. I think the chickens lived in my playthrough. But while I enjoyed Firewatch, I feel like up against those contenders, yeah, it definitely didn't need to win. Inside looked fantastic. I love the art direction on it. Superb.
Well, and it seemed like with all of the little bits and pieces that they were showing of Inside, it had a lot more story and a lot more varied aesthetic to it than I thought it did. Because mm-hmm. I obviously didn't get very far. I only got maybe 10-ish puzzles in. So I didn't get too far into the game itself. So I think, I am more inclined to play more of it now, seeing all the things that I saw at the Game Awards. Because I was like, oh, that looks like a cool mechanic. Oh, that looks like an interesting puzzle. And, you know, again, like I said, there's all these different... kind of aesthetics and stories that I didn't really realize were there, because you basically just start and it's very reminiscent of why am I having such a hard time remembering now the game that basically played in a loop and was the same shadowy black and white looking. Oh my god, it was from a few years ago.
Oh, Limbo.
Oh, Limbo. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Limbo.
It's actually the same guys.
Yes. So it was very reminiscent to me of Limbo, and as cool as Limbo was, there wasn't like a really big overarching story, right? Other than the fact like you were stuck in Limbo because it was a giant loop. But I think Inside seems to have a whole lot more to it than that game did, obviously, because it's the second offering from the same people. So I think I might actually go back and play more Inside because of the Game Awards, which I think is great. Trying to think, because we talked about the Games for Impact, which I still think is a really weird way of saying what they're trying to say with that category. But yeah, I think other than that, we mentioned Best Action Game and...
How do you feel about...
Best RPG.
Yeah. What? How do you feel about RPG? Wild Hunt, Blood and Wine DLC versus Legion.
Yeah, so... Dark Souls 3 is actually another one that I feel like is kind of a missed opportunity in the Game of the Year category. I'm surprised that Dark Souls 3, as much as it's not my cup of tea, it does have some really, really cool like character design and monster design and environments. And I'm surprised that that wasn't up for Game of the Year. Witcher 3, I think, is always going to be a very, very good game, so I'm glad that Wild Hunt 1, but I find it weird that like a DLC is up against like, and I would say the same thing for Legion being included in this category. Mm-hmm. I find it weird when DLCs go up against like actual games, because I feel like, you know, World of Warcraft and Witcher 3, like they had their time as their main games. So I feel like this, like we were talking about Game of the Year, like this is like Dark Souls year. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that it got passed over for DLC to something else. Does that make sense? Like
it does, yeah. It could also
even with Legion, which is it's a full-on expansion, which brings changes to gameplay, changes to all of the systems in the game, new storylines, new areas. Like, I mean, the content that World of Warcraft releases when they put out an expansion is very much on par with a lot of AAA titles now. So I can kind of see it, but I almost feel like maybe it needs to be its own category.
Sure.
Like best RPG is one category, and then like best expansion or DLC or add-on content needs to be another one, because mm-hmm. it seems really weird. Like, 'cause Witcher 3, great game. World of Warcraft, great game. Not released this year. Like,
yeah.
Yes, their DLC came out this year, but we've already agreed that those are fantastic titles, so it almost seems like cheating. Whereas, like, Dark Souls 3 was released this year, was a fantastic title, was an amazing RPG. So, like, yeah. Why is it not winning this category?
It kind of feels like you're stacking the deck by throwing yeah. on another game that had 10 years to build upon.
To refine like, itself, yeah.
Yeah, Legion's been around for a very long... Like, even if we say Legion's new content, what Legion is built on has been around for a very long time. And the same can be said for Blood and Wine. Great expansion, but it's built on a game that was successful, like, years ago. So, yeah, Dark Souls 3, the argument can be made that... I mean, I don't know a lot about those titles, but I know that they're well regarded by their fans, and they're I think a vocal minority. I don't know the numbers, so I might be kind of setting myself up for some emails here, but I feel like of the judges on this panel, maybe a lot of them haven't played a lot of these more obscure games. Like I look at this, like Dark Souls 3 and Xenoblade Chronicles X. Those are two pretty obscure RPGs. I would even throw Legion on there, because I know we know a lot of people who play World of Warcraft, but to a lot of folks, World of Warcraft is this thing of the past. Like, we kind of surround ourselves by Blizzard lovers and Blizzard players, but there are folks out there who talk about World of Warcraft as if its time has passed, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially in games journalism. I hear it all the time on podcasts and stuff where people are talking about World of Warcraft like it was a thing they used to do and say, there's a new expansion.
It's still a thing that 10 million people are currently doing. So
I completely agree. Yeah.
Audience for World of Warcraft is like the biggest video game audience, like consistently.
Yeah. And but, again, I agree. But when you look at a panel of judges compared to maybe an online poll, like online poll, World of Warcraft's going to win this thing in a heartbeat. If people are voting, the public are voting.
Actually, that's really, I don't want to get too far away from the discussion of actual best RPG, but I don't know that much about who actually decides all of these game winners. So, is it a panel? Is it a vote? Is it a fan thing? Like
it is a panel, and I believe the panel is on their website, consisting of journalists from across the board plus industry sort of. What's the word I'm looking for? Like dignitaries, I hesitate to say, because they're usually like just freaking executives. But there are like rules and voting. I'm looking it up here. The following publications submitted ballots for the Game Awards 2016. You got EGM, Eurogamer, Famitsu, Entertainment Weekly, Game Informer, Giant Bomb, just a bunch of different websites. And then there's like in esports categories, the following outlets assisted in the selection of the nominees. And there's a bunch of things that I don't know. And then
yeah,
Twitch.
Selection of nominees. But who actually made the picks?
Oh, so nominees and winners for most categories of the Game Awards are selected by 29 global media and influencer outlets.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if you can say like any of the, like, oh, well, they just don't play World of Warcraft, or they just don't play, or they haven't tried Xenoblade Chronicles. Like,
If
we had people judging these categories who hadn't played the games, I would be calling so much bullshit so fast.
I'm not making, like, a blanket judgment on all 29 of these that they haven't played those two games, because that would be a weird thing Reddit would do, and I'm not Reddit. Like, I'm not trying to create a conspiracy theory here. I'm just laying out the, like, this information that I feel from 29 global media outlets. I'm sure they've played Legion, but maybe they're having the same thoughts we're having, in that, like, Legion, yeah, sure, great game, but in comparison to some of the other games that came out this year, maybe not the strongest RPG for what it's trying to do. Great MMO, maybe not the strongest RPG. I don't know.
It's really funny, because I think Legion is really good in the RPG elements, in that, you know, they have a very, very good story. It's the best story, I think, in the past few expansions, probably since Lich King. So I think the actual, like, story in the expansion is great, but I just find it very, very odd that there are expansions and DLC and stuff that's included in this category, because to me, that's not right. That's not what it should be. It should be its own category, I think, because the reason that Legion is so good is because it has all the history of World of Warcraft to build upon, right? So, you know, like, it's so good because it's tying up storylines, and it's, like, bringing in stuff from previous expansions and previous stories and everything else. And if it was a standalone game that didn't have all of that, then it wouldn't be as good, right? So I don't know. I just think that the DLC and expansion should be its own category.
Yeah. Now, all good points. I agree. Like, DLC is a weird one, and I think it has to be judged on a certain scale when it comes to, like, the amount of content that's come before it. But let's talk about best strategy game, Civ 6. That feels like just kind of like, okay, here you go, Civ 6. Don't get angry. Yeah. Like, it's a great strategy game, but it feels like you don't even come to the table to look at all these other great strategy games that came out.
I will say XCOM 2, I'm surprised. Yeah. As much as, again, like you say, like, Civ 6 seems to be, like, the default. And I guess it kind of suffers from the same sort of problem that I have with, you know, DLCs being in the RPG category, is that, like, as amazing as Civ 6 is, and the fact that the first time I sat down to play it, I played, like, 14 hours straight and didn't even notice that, you know, like, it was 8 a.m. and I should go to bed now. Like, I played it for an extremely long time, and I've gone back to it since, and I really enjoy it. And, you know, it's a great game, but it's Civ 6. It's not revolutionary. It is changes to an existing game system, but it's still the same game. Mm-hmm. Like, I jump in as a fan of Civ 4 and 5, and, you know, like, I barely miss a beat, and there's updated graphics, and there's updated systems, and they've done some cool things with, like, the neighborhoods and things that they introduced this time around, but it's Civ 6 as compared to, like, XCOM 2. XCOM 2 was a really cool strategy game, and I think, you know, it's different enough from XCOM that, you know, it deserves to be recognized. And I know you talked a lot about Fire Emblem.
Yeah. I mean, for the issues I had with Fire Emblem and the fact that I never actually finished it, or there was, like, three versions of the game with different content, it was still probably the best version of Nintendo's Fire Emblem franchise. And, I mean, if we're talking about Civ 6 being the sixth rendition of a Civilization game, this is probably, like, the fourth or maybe third edition of the Fire Emblem games as we know it. But it's the best of those games, and I mean, when you look at this list, it's certainly the most unique in terms of, like, Civ 6, you know what you're getting. XCOM 2, you know what you're getting. Total War Warhammer, you got a good sense of what that game is. Banner Saga 2, like, probably the next step up, but in terms of Fire Emblem, like, you're getting, not only you're getting, like, turn-based strategy content, you're getting base building, you're getting character relationships, you're getting story, you're getting dialogue, you're getting super Japanese cinematic anime. What's not to love? And honestly, like, it would have been an upset if Fire Emblem Fates won over Civ 6. But I just feel like Civ 6 is the, like, yeah, mark your ballots, move on. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of the easy one that doesn't get you in trouble. And sometimes on the internet, that's kind of what you have to do. You know, you don't want to upset the Civ Reddit. Just saying.
I think that's pretty much it for the kind of highlights of the Game Awards. There was also I haven't decided if I really want to talk about this or not, because they gave away the Trending Gamer Award. And I don't know how to talk about that without sounding salty, so I think we might just skip it. But I found it to be another one of the categories that I felt was very samey. Well, I mean, you could say dumb.
I
don't think that there is any problem with recognizing personalities on Twitch or on YouTube, but I found that as I was watching, like, there was only one of them, and it was the guy that won who I'd even seen before, who I was familiar with.
The guy who yells at things.
And that seemed like all five of them were guys that yelled at things. You know, they were, like, scenes they showed of them were them, like, you know, smashing keyboards and screaming at other players. And, you know, sometimes it was excitable, but most of the time it was angry. One dude even has angry in his name.
Angry
and
Joe,
I was just kind of like, I wish that there was a little more diversity in this category and it wasn't just like angry gamers, because I feel like that's not portraying like the majority of gamers. And I'm not sitting here saying, you know, like, where are my women? Where are my whatevers? Like, I'm just saying they all seemed the same, and that's not what I like to watch on YouTube, and that's not what I like to watch on Twitch. And I think it would have been interesting to see a little bit more diversity in personality type.
Well, wasn't a woman nominated, was there?
Oh no, there wasn't. That's what I think. It was five super angry gamer dudes. Like, ugh.
Well, okay,
and I don't care. Like, it could have been. It, like, the fact that it's five dudes doesn't bother me. What bothers me is five personalities that are all exactly the same. And I really wish that there had been a little bit more diversity there. Just to say, like, you know, I want someone who is like, and I know that there was like an esports player of the year too, but like someone who's like super super competitive, and then someone who's really really like fun and happy. You know, like, but it all seemed to be angry, smash things dudes. And I'm like, really, is this like what you're rewarding? Is this what we all want to see? And I guess it is, because it's Trending Gamers. So, I mean, like, it's got to be by, you know, views or, you know, however they measure it. But it struck me as funny.
So this is one of those categories that was voted online by people, because I follow Danny O'Dwyer, who, doesn't always yell, but he's not one of the yelling gamers. He's actually the guy who's been putting together the NoClip documentaries. He just did one. Is doing one on Doom now, and did one previous on Rocket League, where he goes in and he interviews developers and talks about the story. So with Doom, I actually watched it last night. He goes in depth talking to the developers and actually going past the PR stuff and talking about the failed project that was Doom 4 that got scrapped and reimagined as the Doom we know. And he does really great work. And I'm not going to talk down about all the other gamers, but I have to agree with you. Like, Danny Dwyer, but
maybe this is the fault then of the Game Awards. And like we talked about their complete tone deafness early on with the acceptance speech into the giant guy dressed as a chic razor, and how tone deaf that was. And maybe this is just another thing where they're not putting the best foot forward of these five gamers. Like, maybe this is totally on the Game Awards and they're not portraying these gamers properly, because I came away from watching the here's our five nominees section going, holy hell, like, how do they afford all that equipment they just broke? Like,
yeah.
Well, and, you know, so I had the exact same impression of all of them, which is that they were super angry, didn't actually like gaming, just yelled at shit, and that was their entire shtick, and all five of them were the same. So the fact that you're telling me that this Danny guy isn't the same, I think then is a failing of the award show, not necessarily a failing of Twitch and YouTube culture. Although, I will say, yelling at things and being just loud and angry seems to be quite rewarded on those platforms. So, I mean, it's a little bit of both probably, but definitely a failing of the game show or the video game awards, because clearly they didn't present that very relevant, very cool side of Danny O'Dwyer.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this award is, you made a good point. It's good to reward personalities in video gaming because Twitch and YouTube and podcasts and all that fun stuff have become a big part of how video games operate. Some developers even directly mention like specific usages of and viewers of their games on Twitch. So it's not surprising that we have a trending gamer award. Maybe it doesn't have to be one that's voted by popularity, because this is a this is a write-in campaign, like where people like vote online, are able to vote multiple times a day. Maybe it shouldn't be a popularity contest. Maybe it should be chosen by a panel of YouTube folks.
I do find it funny that there are kind of a mixture of popular vote categories and panel decided categories. I tend to prefer panel decided categories, and I think if you're going to do an award show, you do one or the other. It's either people's choice or it's panel decided, and mixing the two, I think, is when you get stuff like this that isn't necessarily representative of what you want your game show or your, I keep saying game show, your video game award show to be.
Sometimes it felt like a game show.
Yeah. but yeah, so anyways, I think that was probably the category I was most disappointed in. And so again, and then it doesn't surprise me that that was the popular vote category. But yeah, I think that's that pretty much wraps it for what we want to talk about with the Game Awards. Do you have any any closing thoughts
on the Game Awards?
Yeah.
I don't know. If it could be each year less and less cringeworthy, you know, to the point where it becomes like let's not forget the Oscars as the comparison is pretty cringeworthy. If you watch all of the Oscars, there are moments in that thing that make you want to turn the TV off. Not like giant razor dude walking down the aisle to present an award, but still pretty cringeworthy.
But cringy, yeah.
Yeah, if we can get to the point where we can at least get rid of the giant mascots that show up, like Mario can still show up, I think that's fine. Like, you can have a giant Mario walk on stage, totally fine with that. But giant razor blade that is a walking ad, kind of not cool, guys. Kind of not cool.
Yeah, even if it was like a superhero or something, but not actually a giant razor. Even if he had like a razor blade on his chest or something and he was Shick Man.
I don't know. It's heading in the right direction.
It's still crappy, but it wouldn't be a literal giant razor.
It was, yeah, that's the worst part. It was a literal giant razor. He had a controller in one hand and he was like making, like, he went to mascot school for 2 weeks and they told him, make sure you over-exaggerate every move and do this a lot. You know, and he's just like, okay, now hold this bald dude's hand because you clearly shaved him before the show. Because look at that head, smooth as a baby's bottom.
That's his superpower.
Yeah,
this thing's smooth as a baby's bottom.
If it could just,
on that note. On that note, we do want to put a call out for some listener feedback. You can hit us up on either our email or on our Twitters and let us know what you want us to play for episode 250, which is next week. Ryan and I are going to be going back and playing games that we have played through the last 5 years of Gamers Inn, and we are going to be seeing if they hold up. So we would like to hear from you. I've already gotten people telling me that I should play some Halo. So,
what? Thanks, why would they do that to you? Who suggested Halo?
I don't know. I think they hate me secretly inside.
I can't do another show where Jocelyn tears into one of my favorite game friends. I did that to myself, and I accept that.
Maybe they don't hate me. Maybe they hate you.
It could happen. I have been known to be a terrible person and worthy of hate. No, I'm kidding. I'm a delightful guy. On that note, I was actually thinking of not listening to people who want to punish me and play Skyward Sword, SWTOR. I know we mentioned Skyrim Remastered Edition as sort of a cheat, halfway between the two. But I don't know. I got SWTOR installed. I had to like call into support to remove my authenticator, but I did it for the show. But no, I'm thinking of going back to Skyward Sword because it was kind of not only the catalyst for the show, but also like one of the first games we talked about.
That's funny. That's exactly why I want to go back and play some Skyrim.
Yeah. And Skyrim was another one of those titles that, like, I think the first episode, if you look at the notes, it's like Ryan played Skyward Sword. We both played Skyrim. And then we talked about our characters in Skyrim for like probably half the show. So it might just be a Skyrim show if no one writes in. But if you want us to play other games like Halo, like, I don't know. I don't think Jocelyn owns any of those games. She might have burned them in effigy. Like, never again. you know, sacrifice to the gaming gods.
I still have some of the 360 Halo titles.
I gave you an option and you just totally burned it. Like, why wouldn't you just like say, yeah, I did that, Ryan. I don't own any of them. What are you talking about? But no, you heard her. I'll edit it out. Let me write a note of that timestamp.
But yeah, so if you guys want to let us know what you would like to suggest for us to play, we're going to do our best to get to them in the next week so we can talk about them next week on TGI 250. It's been 5 super awesome years. Thank you guys so much for listening to us over all of that time. We appreciate each and every one of you, as well as appreciating our patrons. We wanted to remind you guys, first of all, thank you very much for supporting us at patreon.com/thegamersin. But we also wanted to remind you that our patron hangout is coming up Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you are in the Discord server. All details for Discord can be found over at patreon.com/thegamersin. So make sure you join the Discord and you're sitting there in the patron voice chat for us to pull you in at 8 p.m. on Thursday, which is tomorrow, because I just remembered that today is Wednesday. So make sure you guys are around tomorrow night. And yeah, we're really looking forward to talking to each and every one of you. So we will see you then. That will be over on twitch.tv/JossPlays. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on amove.tv, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Joss, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy, and don't forget to follow the show at TheGamersIn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. And as I mentioned, we're looking for suggestions for TGI 250 of old games that you want us to play. Please do email those suggestions over to info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamersin. Remember, tune in next week.
Bye, everybody. Guys.